We're talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great spirits of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Hadn't talked to anybody in 20 minutes. I was kind of stove up there. But anyway, the weather looks great outside as of right now. It's kind of, winds are kind of high. It's 78 degrees. Nathan Brewer dew points 55. The wind is out of the south-southeast at 17, gusting all the way up to 23 miles an hour. And we will have that Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast later in the show. I got a great show on plan today. I'm going to have David Knowles from the Oklahoma Peanut Council on with me today. And we're going to take you through step-by-step with the peanuts. So if you're never been around peanuts and you want to learn something, hang tight for about 5 or 6 minutes and he'll be on here and we'll talk peanuts, because they are digging them. People are digging peanuts right now, so that harvest is full swing, hitting the road, getting stuff done right now. Got a few things to go over with you real quick before we go to break. Number one, thank you so much yesterday for going to the Sayre City Park and helping out those guys raise money for Jason York yesterday. The turnout was great. I got a message on Messenger last night and from Jamie, and she said it was a great success. So thank you for helping out a fellow area resident that's fighting cancer, and we'll keep him in our prayers. Our cash prices, grain prices for the state as of right now, wheat is at $7.04, corn is at $5.28, Milo's at $5.31, and soybeans are hanging tough right there at $11.77. Wheat futures were higher in overnight trading on signs of demand from global importers. Egypt, the world's biggest importer of grain, said it purchased 180,000 metric tons of Russian wheat. The North African nation also purchased 60,000 metric tons from Ukraine. While no U.S. wheat was purchased, Egypt's buy is an indication of solid global demand for the grain. Prices are also being supported by concerns about the world production. Ukraine's ag ministry said yesterday that now sees domestic production at 31.6 million metric tons, down from the prior outlook at 32 million tons. The U.S. Department of Agriculture last month forecast Ukraine output at about 33 million tons. Corn and soybeans also were modestly higher in overnight trading. Wheat futures for December rose 6 cents to $7.52 a bushel at the Chicago Board of Trade, and rose 5.5 to $7.50.5 a bushel at the Kansas City Board of Trade. Corn futures for December delivered 2.5 cents. They gained 2.5 cents to $5.34.75 a bushel. Soybeans futures for November delivery were up 4 cents to $12.46 a bushel. Soy meal rose $1.50 to $324.20 a ton, while soy oil gained 0.27 cents to $60.61 a pound. Ethanol production rises to a two-month high, which wouldn't took much. It's been pretty low. Ethanol output jumped to the highest level in almost 2 months last week, while inventories plunged, according to the Energy Information Administration. Production of the biofuel increased to an average of 978,000 barrels a day in the week that ended October 1st, according to the EIA. That's up from 914,000 barrels on average the previous week, and the highest since 7 days it ended on August 6th. Well, And it's good news. A couple of reminders. This come out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Oklahoma Farm Service Agency out of Stillwater. Oklahoma deadlines are approaching for three critical USDA pandemic assistance programs. So listen up. The coronavirus food assistance program, number two, October 12th, your deadline. The pandemic livestock indemnity program, the PLIP, is October 12th. And the pandemic assistance for timber harvesters and haulers program is October 15th. And that's hot off the press from Stillwater. So if you qualify for any of those, your deadlines is creeping up on you, because today is the 7th. So you got 5 days to get in there and get it done. Well, we're streaming live on Facebook. The text line is open. The KECO Ag text line is 580-225-9697. When we get back from break, I'm going to be speaking with David Knowles with the Oklahoma Peanut Council. So you guys hang in here and help me and text me some questions you want to know, or anything else you want to know about peanuts, or whatever else you guys text me every day. Some of them's good, some of them's bad, but we only do the good on the radio, live on the show. I ran into a couple of listeners I didn't know last night over at Sayre, and they love listening to the show, and I appreciate you guys listening. So I want to give a shout out to Megan. I met her last night. So anyway, everything's good. When we get back, we'll be talking to David. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your Livestock Nutrition Center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
We had commercial cattle, and as a commercial producer, you're always looking for a place to buy bulls that are going to work well for your program. And as we struggled to do that, we decided to raise our own. And so we started producing the traits that we were looking for to buy in bulls. Lori White, B&L Red Angus, blredangus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Benji White, B&L Red Angus, blredangus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
We learned in grade school 1 plus 1 equals 2 and 2 plus 2 equals 4. So what does quality feed equal? Results you can be proud of. It's simple math with a little common sense. Barnes Feed Service in Hobart, Oklahoma has done the math and mixed years of common sense into their feeds so you'll get the results you deserve. And remember, their name ends with service, something they take pride in every day. See their ads in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale at Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Register at LMAauction.com or download the LMA Ringside app. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and we do appreciate it.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Welcome back. The temperature has increased. We're at 80 degrees, and the winds are still out of south-southeast at 16 miles an hour and gust up to 21. And some lucky people this morning through our listening area got some rain. Wasn't much, but some were sprinkles, and some was anywhere from a tenth up to, I see, somewhere between Elk City and Hammond. They might have got a quarter to a half inch there, so we'll take anything we can get. But it was nice and pleasant this morning. Well, on the phone with me right now, I have Mr. David Knowles, and he's with the Oklahoma Peanut Council. And welcome to the show, sir.
Okay. Yeah, it's David Nowlin.
I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
No, and it's the Oklahoma Peanut Commission. So we're pretty close.
We're close. Well, I apologize for that. I'm not the best at pronouncing words, and I was just guessing at it. So anyway, so well, welcome to the show anyway.
Yes, I've done a lot of radio myself, so I've butchered plenty of names myself.
the German ones get me. So
there you go.
So
there you go.
I guess it's because I'm Irish and Native American. I don't know, but the German ones just get me all the time. But you, I met you a couple Fridays ago over at Sayre, where you guys were doing peanut blasting, and that's the first time I've been to that, and that was something to see.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not an exact science by any stretch of the imagination, but what we're trying to do with that is get a feel for about when the fields will be ready to harvest.
Right.
And so and that's what we're doing there. And I think people got the information they needed, how many more days they needed to wait to dig. And there's a lot of digging going on now and will be probably for the next week.
Well, the stuff that you guys figured out over there on that Friday must have worked, because the digging is in full swing around here right now.
That's
and,
right.
But what I thought was interesting is the charts that you guys, the color charts of the peanuts after you blast them, that was laying on the table. But I would have never dreamed that there would have been a different chart for Virginians versus the runners and the Spanish.
Right. And yeah, it's an interesting, the Virginia is a bigger peanut, and so it does mature a little differently, and the colors are a little different, but it's still pretty close.
Pretty close.
So, yes, that's what, it's interesting, because the peanuts is a indeterminate, plant. So you've got some just coming on. You've got some that need a few days. You've got some that are mature. So it's not, there's no perfect day to dig when they're all ready. You try to dig it when the majority, as many as you can get mature. So that's kind of what we're looking at. So like I said, it's not an exact science, but try to get a feel for when to dig to get the most yield.
Right. And what I noticed over there is I've been around a few fields of Virginians, but I think that guy was from Wellington, Texas, that had those in there that day. And those things were huge.
Right. Those are the ones at the baseball field that are in the shell that they, that they sell. And in a, and though that's a kind of a market, it's kind of a little different market. But and they sell a lot of those in the shell. So, that's its own market, where the Spanish and the runners, a lot of those are used for candies. Golden used to have a plant in Anadarko, and a lot of those went to Payday candy bars. And I know M&M buys a lot of peanuts that are Spanish types. So there are different types of peanuts for different markets.
Well, Spanish are my favorite for eating raw.
And, there you go.
That's all I can say about the Spanish. Now, are Spanish the ones that you see most part in when you go in the grocery store and you see those cans or jars of peanuts? Are those mainly Spanish, or are those runners too?
Most of those are Spanish, and there are some companies that will use runners. Runners are just a little bit bigger seeded. Some people say they don't have quite the same flavor. Some people prefer them. If you go to other countries, the bulk of their candy bars are runner types. So it just depends on a preference in that area, I suppose.
Right. Well, my Spanish are my favorite. They're just good to eat raw. And, a guy can overdo it, too. So, but there's I looked at the Southeast AgNet. I get that email every week. And 3 or 4 weeks ago, I touched on some of the numbers coming out of Florida, Georgia, and even Texas and Oklahoma. And they didn't have any on Oklahoma, but I dug a little deeper in some USDA stuff, and I found what I needed to find out about Oklahoma. But it looks like, and what are you seeing out there, according to that report, that our peanut harvest is going to be up 200 to 300 pounds per acre on the average this year in Oklahoma. Is that what you guys are seeing or hearing?
It's really hard to tell. We got a little bit of a late start, and
right.
It was really wet and rainy and cool and slowed things down. And so we were really concerned that it was going to be below that number. And then we got into, you know, August and September, we really got warm and growing conditions were really good. All the peanuts are irrigated that we grow.
Right.
And so we had water on those, and it seems like they really caught up. So we're keeping our fingers crossed, and we're hoping that, yeah, that we are a little higher than last year, but I kind of expect it to be about the same as last year.
And, you know, it's like anything else with any crops. You can go 2 miles and it'll change down the road.
And, yeah, it's impossible to guess that, you know. Since all the crops underground, so you really can't see what you've got till you dig. And the fields that have been dug look pretty good. I think we're seeing some pretty good yields.
Yeah, and then that stuff that was brought in over there at Sayre to the county barn over there that day, there was some awesome-looking stuff. On the vines looked great. There was a lot of peanuts on them, and, you know, and some of them wasn't just duds. You know, they were really good-looking peanuts.
Right. The plant breeding for peanuts is really, in the last 10 years, has really improved. Our yields have gone way up. Back in the 80s, about a 2,800-pound county average was what we would have in Caddo County. And last year, that was over 4,000 pounds. So, you know, the yields, they haven't doubled, but almost, you know, we're seeing, in some cases, you know, we'll see 6,000 pounds, we'll see 3 tons. So they've done amazing things to increase the yield potential of the peanut varieties that we have now.
Oh, yeah. I started helping my neighbors down south about 5-6 years ago with the peanuts. And last year, I actually got promoted to where I could drive a self-propelled peanut thrasher. And, I was top dog last year out there in the field. But, dude, he gets dusty at night. and you hope the wind blows a little bit anyway to keep it out from under you. But with the technology and the setups they got for dumping peanuts in now, you know, and loading the trucks and getting the stuff going and out of here, it's amazing because it takes a lot of trailers to haul a lot of peanuts.
Right. It takes a lot of volume, and it's all, you know, it's big equipment. You go back when they started and they had a stationary thrasher and they'd have to grab a pitchfork and carry it over and put it in there and then try to bag it into burlap sacks, what we call gunny sacks, and
yep,
let it set out in the field and dry in those sacks. So, it's just progressed over the years to just the technology and the equipment we have now. It's a lot more for volume and it's just really more convenient. But problem is, equipment is always expensive too.
Oh yeah, that's not cheap equipment. And I'm glad I waited in later in life to be participating in the peanut harvest also. So
that's right.
But that well, a couple more things before if you got time before we go to a short break. What's the difference? I mean, I guess peanuts, it's hard to grow them in tight ground. Am I right or wrong?
Right, and that's you need a sandy soil because peanuts are the only plant that blooms above ground and then puts the fruit below ground.
Right.
So there's not any other plant that does that. And so since that's on a little peg and we've got to dig that plant, they run these diggers and they have knives. The knives go under the root, cut the root, but, you know, under the peanuts, you know, cut the root, but don't cut the peanuts. And then that pulls that plant up, shakes the dirt over it, turns it upside down, and leaves it out in the field and lets it dry until the combine can come through, which you were driving.
Right. Yeah, and I got to dig them, too. So, yeah.
Oh, you got to dig, too?
Yeah, okay. I got to dig, too. And also, yeah, the depth on them knives is very important. So.
Right. And it has to be a sandy soil so that those peanuts aren't torn off when you dig them.
Right.
And that's the other thing is you need really good quality water. And this area from Caddo County goes on up into southwest Blaine County, and then eastern Custer County. All that Rush Spring Aquifer goes through there, so they've got a good quality water supply and the right soil type. So it's just perfect for peanut production.
And so Caddo County is the major producer in Oklahoma. Is that correct?
It's the number one county, and the number two county is Beckham County, where we were over at Sayre.
Right, and so, then what other, is there a lot more counties, or is there just certain areas?
Yeah. The Custer County is third in production. It drops off a lot after Caddo and Beckham.
Right.
Almost 7,000 acres in Caddo, almost 4,500 acres in Beckham. Then it drops down to about 750 acres in Custer, and then about 560 or 80 acres in Blaine. So it drops, but that's the 1, 2, 3, and 4 is Caddo, Beckham, Custer, Blaine. We also have some peanuts in a little bit in Grady, some in Kiowa, Jackson, Tillman. So, yeah, through the Southwest, where you got the right conditions of sandy soil and water supply, you got that combination, you can grow peanuts.
Yeah, because water is a major source that you have to have.
They really need to be irrigated. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, because our weather. Well, it doesn't matter whether it's Caddo, Beckham, Western Oklahoma. It's so unpredictable. I think the once you get past Elk City going towards Clinton and Oklahoma City, they get a little more rain than we do here because everything starts right here. And hopefully we got some rain coming up, which after the peanuts are dug, does the rain hurt them at all?
You really would try to avoid getting them rained on if you can. It might affect your grade a little bit. So they'll try to dig them, let them dry down, and get them harvested before you get, much rain on them. That'd be a goal. And the number one thing we're trying to avoid is freeze.
Right.
We don't want to be late and get freeze damage because once they get freeze damage, their contract's no good. So, and you really don't want to grow peanuts without a contract, without a price arranged in advance. So they really, that's one reason we dig. We really overall probably start digging about a week earlier than we used to because to avoid freeze. And it's been a little more predictable. We had an early freeze in 2019, and that caused a lot of problems. And then it was a little earlier last year, but not as bad. And then, so we're really trying to avoid those early freezes, and hopefully it doesn't look like that's going to be an issue at this point this year.
No, it doesn't look too bad right now. And I remember that last year we were on our last patch of thrashing and we got a freeze and he had those graded. And I might be wrong, but I think when he had them graded, he must have dug them at the right time when they was mature enough. Because when the freeze come through there and we had to let the frost get off the vines, and everything dry out before we start thrashing, it didn't hurt him that bad, but he got lucky. He won the lotto that day.
Yeah, that's one though. If they've dried down enough in the field, there's not enough moisture in that peanut for a light frost to hurt it sometimes. So that's one thing, but that's risky.
Yeah,
we don't want to be in that situation.
I'm pretty sure he didn't sleep that night because we heard the frost was coming in. But anyway, we got lucky. We got him. We kept him separate in a separate trailer, and it ended up being okay for him. But if he had just dug them, he could have been in trouble.
Anyway,
well, David, let me take a break to pay some bills here real quick, and we'll talk about the different R factors, the R growth, if you will, afterwards, the R1 through, what is it, R9, is the growth schedule on the peanuts, is that correct?
Yeah, we might talk a little bit about the history of peanuts, what got them started, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, be great. Well, you guys, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, and I got David with the Oklahoma Peanut Commission. I got that right? I wasn't even going for your last name this time. But anyway, he's joined me, and we'll be right back after this break and talk more about peanuts. You're listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, October 4th. 1,136 head were sold. 15 head of steers at 539 brought 137. 19 at 666 brought 136.50. 12 at 782 brought 150.50. 47 at 826 brought 150.25. 26 at 935 brought 140.75. 8 head of heifers at 351 brought 135. 23 at 494 brought 132.50. 4 at 549 brought 123. 27 at 771 brought 136. 19 at 822 brought 135.50. Butcher cows were 20 to 69, bred cows 610 to 1035, butcher bulls brought 71 to 93. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, I-40, exit 71 in Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rain Storm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right, welcome back. I have David from the Oklahoma Peanut Commission on here with me, and we're going to talk a little history about the peanut.
There you go. One of the things that got peanuts started way back, of course, peanuts have been going on a long time. They had grown peanuts in their garden for people to eat and things like that for themselves. But one of the things that got peanut production to take off was back when the diesel engine was invented. And if you Google Rudolph Diesel invented the diesel engine back in about 1912, and he invented it to run on peanut oil.
Really?
He didn't run it on diesel fuel, hadn't come around yet. It ran on peanut oil. And so it's pretty interesting because he really saw this as an agriculture boom for the agriculture industry. All the way back then, he was way ahead of his time. And as the diesel engine progressed and World War I came along, they could see that if they used the peanut oil, that burned clear. So when the submarines were going through the water, you wouldn't have black smoke coming out of the water to tell where the submarine was, okay? You could actually...
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, and so that's the way it was designed to be used. The oil companies, they wanted to create their own fuel to run this because they had gasoline, and a waste product of gasoline was a product that they called diesel. And that was after Rudolph Diesel passed away. So I don't think he would have been too thrilled about that. In fact, there were even conspiracy theories going around that the big oil companies had something to do with his death. So it was pretty interesting, a pretty interesting history. And so diesel fuel, I don't think he wanted that named after him, but that was something that happened. So history
That's
is
crazy. I didn't know that. Yeah. I'll have to read that.
History is pretty amazing. So anyway, when we get into World War II, and these submarines needed a whole lot of diesel peanut oil, then the government came up with a program, a contract, or a guaranteed price, and then we started growing a lot of it for the government. And of course, there's also the entire peanut industry as it developed for peanut butter and the cookies and candies and all those things, but the contract was by the government for World War II. But the program worked so well that even after World War II was over, they continued the program all the way until 2002. And so farmers had a set price, but it also restricted the acres. You know, you had to have a history. They called it, quote, a Originally, they called it quota acres, Then later on, they changed it to quota pounds, but it was a set price that the farmers had, and you had to have the government quota system being part of that program in order to get that guaranteed price. So back then, people in Elbert and Beckham County couldn't grow them. So as time changed and that program changed, now everyone can grow them, but the price came down for quite a while. And so now the price has been slowly coming back up, and we're seeing more acres. Population gets bigger, more demand. So it's mainly a food product now. It's not really a fuel product, but it's kind of interesting that Rudolph Diesel invented the diesel engine tube-used peanut oil.
And so, now it burns diesel.
Made from oil. Yeah, I think I would be interested to know how he would feel about it today, that what we're using for fuel, they're calling diesel, which was his last name.
Wow, yeah, I'm going to check that out. I had no idea that's what that was, because it just amazes me, you know, through the years that I'm through agriculture. I always wondered why, you know, they had these peanut acres, as they call them, or quota. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, whoever did that bill knew what he was doing, because there's no changing it. And now I know why. And that's crazy. But, you know, and then when they started getting peanut acres, and like, say, you was talking about Beckham County, where these farmers, landowners out here, what, buy an egg peanut quota from other people? Is that what
right.
was going
could,
on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would have to buy quota to grow them back then.
And is that still, do they still have that quota today, or those acres?
No, you don't have to have a quota. You don't, there's not, that government program went away, and now it's just like any other crop. You grow it. There might be a little bit of farm subsidy, but for the most part, you know, it's what you can get a contract price for.
Right. So, and there's always so much contracts out there, right? I guess.
Right. That's limited. It's limited. The bulk of the peanuts are grown in Georgia, a little bit in over into Alabama.
Yeah.
We're starting to see some peanut production in northeastern Arkansas. And then there's some down south of San Antonio, down that way. And, of course, a big area around Seminole, Texas, another big area of peanut production. So it's just kind of scattered. It's where you have the right conditions. As I mentioned, you've got to have that sandy soil and a good water supply. And that's where you find the peanut production.
Well, it was kind of funny when I asked you that before the break about the soil condition. I got a text from a gentleman, the major, we call him on the radio here on the text line. He said, what's the ideal type soil for peanuts? When you answered that right away, I was already thinking it. He texted in. Well, is the peanut production in Oklahoma, as far as poundage-wise, is it as strong as ever, or is it normal or below, or
we used to have over 100,000 acres, and now we're around 15,000, so that's how much lower we are now.
I got you.
Caddo County used to have 30,000 acres just on itself, and now it was kind of the main, you know, that was the main cash crop pretty much. And
yeah.
Now with the contract, cotton is actually paying better overall most years better than peanuts, and so the bulk of the acres is cotton, and peanuts are kind of coming in as a good crop. You know, peanut being a legume is going to put some nitrogen in the soil, and so it's an excellent crop to rotate with cotton. And so that's kind of where we're falling in. We're kind of the little brother now, where we used to be big brother.
Big brother. Yeah, I remember when I was growing up, back in the 70s and even through the 80s, going down towards Binger and stuff along 152 there, it was peanuts and pivots and side rows just running mm-hmm. out your ears down through there. And because we used to go down there and go crow hunting a lot. And now you drive through there, and I don't even remember the last time I've seen any peanuts along 152.
Right, you have to know where the peanuts are to go from 30,000 down to around 7,000 acres we have now. You know, that's quite a drop-off. So it's most of what you're probably seeing under the pivots is cotton. And there's a lot of, and cotton does well, pretty well dry land most years too. So cotton is probably the bigger cash crop. But we still have a really good fit for peanuts, because you just don't want to grow cotton year after year after year. You're going to start developing disease problems, and you need something to rotate with the cotton. under those pivots, and peanuts is an excellent choice.
Okay, speaking of diseases and stuff, why do peanut farmers rotate their peanuts every 2 years to a different spot?
Oh, yeah, we try. It's just like any other crop. It's like I mentioned with the cotton. If you're growing the same crop over and over and over, you're going to start developing diseases. And peanuts, they have their diseases like any other crops. We have some leaf spot foliar diseases. We have some soil diseases. So by rotating, we can cut way back on those disease issues, and it just makes it a little more economical to grow them. If you're not having to put on a fungicide, you know, from time to time, that will save you some money. So that's what we're doing. We're just rotating to cut down on those so we don't create a problem.
Well, yesterday I had a gentleman on here, and we was talking about soil health and stuff, and one of the things he mm-hmm. brought up on was, for example, was peanuts and pod rot. And
right.
he was saying that pod rot is usually, you know, it's a disease or a fungus, but he said usually it's most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time it's called caused from a lack of calcium.
It may be. Our soils and cattle are really naturally pretty high in calcium. A lot of people do use add calcium, whether it's liquid or in sulfate. I can't remember the right term right now, but you can put it down either way. But we do have a lot of people probably mostly using some type of liquid calcium now. When they do, we just ask people to soil test, and then you can see what your calcium levels are. It will do it. But this field by field with pod rot, it's an unusual disease. Being that we were wet early this year, we were wet for, what was that time period?
May, June, and July.
Right, and so you can get some pod rot. Rhizoctonia pod rot starts about that time. There are some fungicides we can put down if we get them down early enough that might help us. So we'll probably see maybe a little more pod rot than normal this year, but I've also seen some very clean fields. It's a field-by-field thing. You know, we can't tie it to any one thing. We can't tie it to calcium. We can't tie it to what chemicals you used or whether you're no-till or whatever. It seems like there's an exception to every rule. So pod rot's one of those challenging ones that we'll be working on and continue to work on. But it was really this year more of the probably what kicked it off was that wet June and July this year. A lot of years we don't usually have that. So it's just a kind of a year-by-year, field-by-field thing. It's very tough to get a handle on. I've been going around taking a few samples from different fields where they are finding a little, and I've sent those to the lab, took a set of samples up to the lab in Stillwater last Friday and see if we can identify it and see, because there are several pathogens that can cause it. Rhizoctonia, Fusarium, Pythium can all cause it. And so we're trying to get an idea of which one it was this year. So we'll find out, I guess, when I get some results. I haven't got any results back from those, but we should find out soon. So it's just one of those things that we have to deal with peanuts. And it's like any, you know, since the crop's underground, you can't see what you've got till you dig it. And so it's always an interesting to see.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing I see about it. You know, you got there to check your peanuts. Which vine are you going to check? Because you could have it down there at the end of that row, but you check it down here where everything looks good.
Yeah. I've been to fields where, you know, 160-acre field is perfectly clean, and you go across the road, and you can find a little bit in a pivot just across the road. So it's really hard to pinpoint when or where you're going to have it. But it hasn't been anything that's restricted us from growing. It hadn't been bad enough to restrict us from growing peanuts. When it goes through the combine, it's only going to be probably a small percentage of the fields that have it and a small percentage of the pods on the plant. And when you run that combine through, it'll blow those on out. So okay. They don't end up with the rest of the crop.
Yep.
It just hurts your yield a little bit, and it might hurt your grade a little bit. But it hasn't been something to, get us to quit growing.
Oh, yeah. It, like I said, I've got into this peanut in the last 5 years, the peanut deal, and it's unique. And, you know, it's a crop that you can go in there and you dig it, like we've been talking about. You dig it, turn the plants over, you let them dry, you go through there and thrash them, and then you can come back through there and you can make a little extra money by rolling up the hay behind it.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's... Right. And at least, like I say, it'll leave a little nitrogen behind, maybe 30 pounds an acre of free nitrogen leaves behind for the next crop.
Yes.
So, and with some of the newer varieties, I think that might be even higher than 30 pounds, because a lot of these new varieties, I don't know if you're familiar with the peanut and the way a legume works, but a way a legume works, it's a symbiotic relationship between a bacteria and the plant. It provides a little home on the root for the bacteria, which is a little nodule. We call them nodules.
Right.
And these little knots on the root, the waste product of the bacteria is nitrogen. So the new varieties seem to have even more nodules than the old ones. And so, I'm thinking that maybe these newer varieties are actually leaving a little more nitrogen behind than what the older varieties did.
Oh, and so, I agree with you, because a lot of these guys, well, around here, the ones that I know, you know, they either got it planted already, or they're going to sow rye right after they get the harvest out of there to, you know, get some cover, because it's sandy ground, it's going to blow, and mm-hmm. that wheat seems like it just, that rye looks like it just shoots straight up.
Yeah, I've been surprised how quick it pops up after what they'll do a lot of times is scatter that rye on after they dig, but before they combine, and then when they run that combine through, it just automatically puts it in the soil. You know, it's just right there in the soil ready to go. Or sometimes they'll put it down even before they dig.
Yes, and, I've seen that.
Put it down before they dig, and then it's planted. Acts, you know, when they work, dig, and run the combine, then it's automatically planted for them, and it just pops right up in a couple of days. So, yeah, it's good. You're right. That's to prevent wind erosion, keep that sand from blowing away. Our farmers do such an amazing job now compared to the way it was in the 80s when we had very little no-till and very little row-till or reduced till, and so the sand would blow and cover the highway. It was terrible. But now they're very good at managing erosion these days. You just don't see it like you did in the past with all the no-till and reduced till that we have. It makes huge, huge difference. So
it's big time difference, because I've been down through there along 152. I remember the sandstorms down there driving through there, and I've seen some sand up on 152 before. That was back in the 70s, early 80s. But yeah, it's but with our modern technology, new stuff, new efforts being put out by our great stewards of the land that I call them, it's amazing. So one last question, and then I got to let you go. I'm running out of time. Do you see any difference in the production of conventional planting versus no-till planting with peanuts?
There are some differences. When we first saw no-till come in, we were afraid that it would be worse. We thought we were going to have more disease problems because, you know, you've got roots rotting in there that disease can grow on and then move over to the peanut plant, but we didn't see that. In fact, I think, you know, overall it seems like maybe a little less disease in no-till and row-till than we have in conventional till. I don't know that we have any research to back that up, you know, but it just seems like we've had less problems the more row-till and no-till we've had a little less trouble.
Well, David, I appreciate it, and thanks for coming on representing the Oklahoma Peanut Commission, not the council.
That's all right.
Yeah, and so thank you so much, and maybe we can talk a couple weeks or a month after peanut harvest gets done, and you have some data that you could share with us.
All right. Sounds like fun.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on today, and have a great peanut day.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, David. Well, you were listening with David with the Oklahoma Peanut Commission. Sorry, I got beef council on the brain, cotton council on the brain, so I messed that up. But it is the Peanut Commission, and we were talking peanuts, and it was a great interview or conversation. And when we get back, we're going to have the Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast. So stand by. I'll be right back after this.
Every trust is a little bit different. Some of them, those assets may need to grow because they've got to take care of somebody for a lot of years. Sometimes those assets need to maintain or they need to just support a certain lifestyle. There's lots of different objectives for trusts. And what we do is we determine what the objective is for each trust. And then we do our very best to manage the assets in that trust to achieve that objective. I'm Nan Shiblum, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust in Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
When we're all on the same page, things run smoother, work gets completed faster, life is easier. And that's exactly what advanced technology from Valley does. IconX brings all of your pivots together into one manageable network with full remote capabilities, regardless of the brand. Get the most out of your pivots at a fraction of the cost of a full panel upgrade. Valley IconX. Any brand of pivot. One connected network. Smart irrigation. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
It's so convenient for farmers and ranchers to get what you need in one place. The Wheeler General Store is the do-it-best hardware store that carries vet supplies to doctor your animals, high-pro feed, also master hand milling and smart lick tubs. Delivery is available if you need it. And at Wheeler Ag, right there on site, they've got dry fertilizer application with blending capabilities. Wheeler General Store and Wheeler Ag on Highway 152, a mile east of the four-way stop in Wheeler, Texas.
You can also find the Wheeler General Store on Facebook and Instagram.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
I'll be back. Our weather looks, looks interesting for the next week. Our current temperature is 82 degrees. Now we have a heat index of 81. The Nathan Brewer dew point is 56. Winds are south-southeast, 15 miles an hour, gusting up to whammon 21. 89 for a high today. It's going to be smoldering hot tomorrow, 97 degrees. Saturday, 95. Sunday, temperature drops to 87 with a 20% chance of storms. Sunday night, 40% chance of storms with a low of 54. And Monday for Columbus Day, it's 81 degrees. Just a heads up, starting today, the winds are slowly going to creep up during the daylight hours. All the way through Sunday with the wind Saturday going to be 10 to 20 with gust up to 35 and 40 miles an hour. So I cut some hay down yesterday, and so I'm not going to rake. I'll just bale it in the windrow. It'll surely be dry out by Sunday. But, it's going to be a blow dry. Enjoy this because from looking at the very, very Long Ranger, this is the last time we should, not saying won't, see temperatures in the 90s. So enjoy this good drying weather we got coming up. Hobart Stockyard sale was yesterday, and I got some numbers for you. The steers in the 4 to 5 hundred pound range, they had average of 425, and they were selling for as high as $1.57. Steers in the 700 to 800 range, average weight was 743. They were selling as high as $1.45. And then we had some heifers in the 400 to 500 range, and they were selling for as high as $1.36. And their average sale price was $1.29. And then we had some heifers weighing 800 to 900, selling as high as $1.20. And their average weight was 806. There was some cows. Average weight, 1293. We're selling up to 7150. And they had some bulls in there. Average weight, 1664, was bringing up to 90 cents at Hobart. So if you guys got some stock you need to sell next week down to Hobart, give old Rex a call. He'll be available to help you with your selling and buying needs. Tomorrow, Elk City Livestock Auction will be going on. And Monday, the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction will be going on. Call Mr. Brandon Hickey at either place. Just call his mobile, and you can he'll help you out. And it's in the new Penny News. Is hot off the press. And if you look in there to page 4, Today in Ag has two full pages in there. All kinds of things going on in there. All the receipts from Woodward Livestock Auction, Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, Elk City Livestock Auction, and the Hobart Stockyards. All those prices in there from the last week are in there. And then there he is, Mr. Jerry Nine with the Woodward Livestock Auction. His pretty face and cowboy hats in there. And he's talking about some other things, business as usual with the COVID, the buyer's market, and the Packers, the whole nine yards. Good story to read. And he said that his quote is, "The cattle market is still going good, but we are still getting cheated by the packer. Are we fine with that and afraid to make waves? Stand up for what's right," he says. And then he's got a good blonde joke after that. And then the Jimmy tip of the week's in there. Make sure when you turn to let your digger down while digging peanuts, it does a better job. So that's my Jimmy tip of the day or week on that one. And then if you go on back here, that's why you guys need to go get you a new copy of the Penny News. There's a auction in here that I noticed that you guys, if my paper open up here, because I was on the Today and Ag, there we go. There's an auction in here going on here in a couple weeks at north of Hammond, north and east of Hammond, that's got some interesting equipment on it. So if you guys are, you know how hard new equipment is to come by right now, but there's a John Deere 310 backhoe, there's a John Deere 7810 tractor, there's a John Deere 4440 with 4200 hours on it, there's a John Deere 4430, 4240, another 4240, all kinds of good equipment in there. Check it out. That's Grant's Auction. My old buddy Monty Tucker, he'll be helping with that. So check that out. Get your copy of the Penny News. I hope you enjoyed today's show. You've been listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Have a great day, and God bless.
Kicking in overdrive. Cool.
This is KECO, Elk City.